from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Joshua Johnson. That device that connects you to the internet, what does it look like? These days, it could look like a phone, a tablet, a wristband, a car, a smoke detector. This change in technology can weave computers more seamlessly into every single aspect of your life. Some believe this shift toward the so-called Internet of Things will make us more efficient, healthier, and let us live better. But consumers are not convinced, at least not yet, and there are plenty of questions to answer first. We will try to answer some of them in this hour, including your questions about the Internet of Things. That's next on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. Good morning. I'm Joshua Johnson. How would the supermarket know you're out of milk before you do? Here's one way. Maybe the milk carton told them so. If we put a chip of some kind inside the carton, it could detect when the level was low, then alert the store. And when they saw you walk in, which they would because your smartphone is in your pocket, your shopping cart would display a paperless coupon and a map of the inside of the store. Bingo! Discount milk. The technology to connect devices, known as the Internet of Things, already exists. And if Silicon Valley's estimates are to be believed, it is an inevitable part of your and my life. But do you need it? Do you want it? Are we ready for it? In this hour of Forum, we'll explain the Internet of Things, consider the possibilities, weigh the risks, and try to make sense of this rapidly changing technology. Joining us now to discuss it is Kevin Trilley. He is the Vice President of Product Management at the data privacy company TrustE. He joins me here in the studio. Kevin, good morning.
Thank you, Joshua. Good morning.
Let's start off by making sure we have a clear definition of this term, the Internet of Things. Is it another system that we log on to? Is it a separate network? Is it the next evolution of our current internet? What is it?
Yeah, great question. So it's definitely what I consider the next evolution of the internet, and it encompasses a lot of different things. And so think of it from the highest level as we are about to be joined on the internet by tens of billions of devices that have not been present in the past. Each one of these providing new services, each one of these collecting a lot of data. And as such, there are lots of new services and value we get, businesses get, and all users get. But with that also becomes some issues that we're going to discuss today, which involve societal impacts, privacy impacts, and security impacts of that data.
So it's basically the internet that allows devices that are not necessarily conventional computers, laptops, smartphones, desktops, but allows devices that just look like objects to suddenly be web-enabled, to be smart.
Yeah, it brings out higher-level analytics of various different measures. And so you can look at devices that are connected to your body, devices that are connected to appliances in your home, devices that are connected to appliances or manufacturing equipment in a plant. All those today are not connected to a public internet.
Now, TrustE held a conference yesterday on the Internet of Things, specifically focused on privacy. What was the big theme or maybe some of the big themes that came out of that event?
Yeah, it was a great discussion, and it was really fun to bring together businesses, consumer advocates, and the government to really make the laws around privacy around the world to really think about these implications of all this data being brought out. And if you think about the way devices talk to the internet, it's very different than the way we do and interact with our laptops and computers and interact data in a way that's very formidable the way we do it today. What this brings up are issues around control of data and awareness of data collection. So how do we know these devices that we're using are actually collecting? How can we control that data if we don't want that data collection? And then more importantly, the value we get from all that data collection and those new applications, is it really worth that trade-off around privacy?
So other than just building the backbone of this network, which would have to handle this additional growing tidal wave of data, it's also a matter of, you know, who gets to see the data, what data do we produce, can I shut it off, do I have to give it to you, can I store it locally, all those questions.
Yeah, and your first point's really valid in that there was a stat we talked about yesterday where only 0.5% of today's data is even being used. So now imagine
Say that again.
Half of a percent of today's data is being used.
Well, where's the other 99.5%?
It's being collected for future use, or it's being collected and not used at all. It's
considered. So we're just kind of sitting on it.
Correct.
And when you say using it, like what constitutes use versus
using it,
storage?
Like, for example, analytic data to measure the performance of something. In some cases, you know, you need one parameter to do that where maybe 10 are being collected. And so there's that other 90% in that case that is not being used.
So we're basically – there's so much data collection going on, and I don't want to camp on this too long, but just so I fully understand it, the internet is currently – what we call the internet – is collecting tons and tons of information, the vast majority of which is just collected for collection's sake right now, but someday – once the internet continues to evolve, all this data we're collecting, we would actually be using to do something.
Yeah, and that plus the scope of that data with the Internet of Things will multiply to the tens of billions of more devices. So that data load will increase just exponentially.
I don't think people realize just how much, as you put it, I guess I didn't because I live in Silicon Valley but don't really work in Silicon Valley, how much potential there is in the internet we have now that is totally untapped and that we as consumers really can't tap because of the technology. We just don't have it.
Yeah, and we touched on a little bit yesterday, which is the analytics and the intelligence needed to process that data is obviously a new evolving space that will continue for the next decades. So it's coming for sure.
Now, Trustee did a study finding that only about a fifth of consumers currently see the benefits of these smart devices outweighing the risks. What do you make of that?
Yeah, so Trustee does annual surveys for consumers to really take, you know, a temperature around the awareness, the education level, and the attitudes of consumers around privacy. This shows me there's a big gap in understanding. And so education's absolutely needed. And as you think about the Internet of Things being rolled out by companies, there's that responsibility to make sure that they're aware of that situation with consumers and bring features out that are well presented to the user because they don't know. And what's going to happen, and the other part of our survey was that we saw that that can be a barrier to adoption. People don't understand. They may think the worst case and thus not use the services.
You fear what you don't understand.
Exactly.
Now, in my example at the beginning with the milk and the milk – but by the way, is that an apt example? Does that
– Yeah, there's that's in the kind of bucket of consumer applications. But yeah, that's an appropriate one for sure. There's other ones that are probably more realistic about privacy where people look at – you know, and I think Michelle will talk about this later – about, you know, some of the health applications and potentially where that data can go and really thinking about that sensitivity of data that you know, really is connected to you as a person. So milk information is less sensitive in that regard, but there still could be. You know, if there's some – medical issue or something that's associated with milk drinking, for example, then maybe you're not wanting that data to be shared.
Well, but you know, I understand health information, but I drink a lot more milk than I go to the doctor. I mean, that hits me weekly, and the doctor hits me hopefully less than monthly. I mean, I remember at the latest – at the Worldwide Developers Conference that Apple just had where they talked about their new standards for getting information from medical devices. And Google at I.O. also talked about – at their developers conference, I.O. also just talked about that. And I could tell that there was an excitement about that, that they were like, we're not sure exactly where this is going to go, but this is the next frontier. And oddly, I wonder if maybe that is a frontier that just scares some people at this point, well, where maybe the milk carton thing I can deal with because I need milk anyway and I'll take the coupon. But you knowing my blood pressure and, you know, my pulse oxygen level and sending it over my iPhone, I'm not sure I'm ready for that.
Right. And it puts you in more control of your health is the value. The question that needs to be addressed by industry is where's that data going and who would have additional access to that other than the application you're dealing with for your health information. That's the example that people need to address up front because until it's educated, people will think the worst case.
Now, yesterday, Trustee announced it's created a privacy working group to help figure some of these issues out, which are certainly at the forefront of what a lot of tech companies are going to have to deal with. What would you say – I know our time with you is running short. What would you say is the biggest thing that tech companies should be doing now to prepare for the Internet of Things?
Yeah, and I think the awareness of the consumer of what kind of data collection is happening needs to be very transparent. And then the second part of that is there needs to be some control mechanism where consumers who don't want to participate in some of this can raise their hand and say, please remove me from this data collection. And a lot of that's going on today in the standards bodies of the internet. The same thing needs to apply to where your device is automatically being identified through Wi-Fi or through Bluetooth. The same kind of things need to be considered.
So that debate over opt-in versus opt-out is something we have to start resolving.
Yeah, I think it's even before that. Make people aware that they even have a choice, that data is being collected, and then offer those different choices.
Gotcha. That's Kevin Trilley, Vice President of Product Management at the data privacy company TrustE. Kevin, I appreciate your time. Thanks for talking
to us.
Thanks,
Joshua.
Let's continue the conversation now with David Rose, a scientist at the MIT Media Lab with a focus on tangible user interfaces. He is the author of the new book, Enchanted Objects: Design, Human Desire, and the Internet of Things. He joins us by phone. David, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Here in the studio is Michelle Dennedy, the chief privacy officer at the digital security company McAfee. Her book is called The Privacy Engineer's Manifesto. She joins us in studio. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning.
And also on the phone is Jeff Chester, the executive director of the consumer protection group, the Center for Digital Democracy. Jeff, welcome.
Good morning.
We also welcome your questions and comments and thoughts on this topic on the Internet of Things. Please call us 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Email us, forum@kqed.org. You can also find us on Facebook or on Twitter. We are at KQED Forum. David, let me start with you. Your book seeks to paint a picture of the future of the Internet of Things. Based on what we know now, kind of on our current trajectory, what might that future look like?
Thanks for asking. So in the book, I talk about four potential futures that really define what our relationship to technology might look like in the future. So one I call the terminal world, which is more black slabs with pixels on things like phones and phablets and tablets. That's sort of where we're, that's the current assumed trajectory. I think there are three other that are compelling. One is prosthetics, where things like Google Glass give us augmented senses. I think that's ultimately a sort of bankrupt idea because those tend to isolate us and give us our own bubble filter world, a privatized view of the world that really won't bring us together as people. The third future I describe in the book is social robots, where our relationship to technology is delegated out to others that are doing things on our behalf. This is sort of the Downton Abbey vision of, you know, our robot slaves will take care of it all so we don't have to have technology on ourselves. But I think the most positive and humane and desirable future is one of enchanted objects, where these are ordinary things, familiar things, things like furniture and jewelry and clothing and urban furniture and even apartments that are what they are today, but they're connected to the cloud and they have extraordinary powers, but they still have a sense of what they do on their own. So my exemplar of this is think of an umbrella that starts out as an umbrella that does what it can do, but then you have embedded in its handle the ability to sense if it's going to rain tomorrow. So this is both an umbrella and an object that anticipates its own use, but you don't need to go to an app in order to get the information.
Michelle, McAfee's latest threats predictions report talks about, to go back to the privacy angle, about a growing number of attacks on mobile devices, including holding them for ransom. And I can only imagine how terrifying it would be for my connected car to hold me for ransom, or my mother's pacemaker. I mean, it sounds crazy. Or my umbrella, for that matter. But if we're putting more devices online, then what do businesses need to do to make this work?
Absolutely. So I think to have any sort of enchanted device, and I love that term, we really have to think about the kind of the boring details, right? So behind the scenes, before that umbrella even contemplates predicting the weather and sending us something through our toothbrush saying, don't forget my umbrella today, we want to figure out who's the one sending the messaging, how are we dealing with these analytics, and most importantly, what are the threat vectors that are created when we have systems that are literally as broad as every noun that you can see in your environment. So to do that, we have to really kind of turn the traditional methodologies of security and privacy inside out. Instead of protecting everything as if it's a castle with a moat, you have to start thinking of things as being just aware, situational intelligence, having analytics that say, where are the bad guys coming from? Where is, like that predictive element of weather, we're going to have a predictive weather report, if you will, of the Internet of Things. What's the threat vector of the day and what's the temperature going to be today? What are the things you're going to have to do to evade and cloak yourself? yourself in certain contexts? And most importantly, what are the things we're going to build from a privacy context so that we can actually connect with the people with whom we want to connect and keep the bad guys out?
So less like a soldier in armor and more like a special agent who can kind of go out.
Absolutely. And a weatherman. I'd like to see there being a weatherman and a data man.
David, let me come back to you. I think I may have gotten away from your four analogies a little too quickly. The analogy of the enchanted things, that sounds pretty cool. Do you think that that is the most likely outcome at this current trajectory as we're going, or do we still have a ways to go before that becomes more likely?
I think most people today there's this assumption that the app society and the ecosystem of apps will be really the primary way that we interact with technology. And I think that's too bad, because I think that apps and phones sort of take us away from social connection. And, you know, a smartphone is incredibly seductive, and, you know, it can distract us from even the best conversations with the most important people in our lives. And when those apps fly off the screen and into everyday things, the technology that we use can be a lot simpler. And we don't have to navigate in order to find the information we want, but it can be presented ambiently in our peripheral vision, which is much more desirable.
So technology is a way of reconnecting us to the world rather than pulling us away from it.
Right, and to traditional materials, things that are embedded in plush materials or in wood, sort of brings craft and a sense of industrial design back rather than just pixel pushing.
Jeff Chester, I get the feeling that once consumers really get an idea of what these devices can do, they're going to want them. Maybe hesitantly, but once they hit a consumer level, people are going to think, this is cool. I could use this.
Well, I don't think we have a choice. I mean, this is the future, and I apologize for interrupting.
No,
this is the future that they're giving us. Look, this is all about, we're not ready for the Internet of Things. We don't have a national privacy policy in the United States. We don't have consumer digital protection safeguards at the federal level. The state regulation is lagging. This is all about Google and Facebook and the others expanding their culture of commercial surveillance. Just as we know from Edward Snowden that there is this vast governmental surveillance system, in fact, that system was based on the ability to collect and use the techniques pioneered by Silicon Valley and others. We are now already being constantly tracked, not just on our computers, but on our mobile devices, on online games, when we go into stores, even when we're on the street. Now they want to further extend that surveillance so, in essence, they can better sell to us.
Well,
and
Jeff,
there's no safeguards.
Jeff, I'm glad you brought that up, and I should note that Michelle was nodding her head in agreement with you as you were saying that, lest anyone in our audience think that this is consumer protection versus business. There seems to be a little overlap in the concern for privacy, at least as is expressed now. But, Jeff, what do you think we should be doing now to prepare for the wider rollout of this technology?
Let me say to you that, you know, it would be great if I could tell you that Google and Facebook and the others – or the corporate members of trustee want to see a national privacy policy in the United States or even support the stronger human rights-based privacy policy in Europe. But they do everything they can every day to defeat legislation in Congress, to impede the Federal Trade Commission from acting, and they've been working to undermine what's been going on in the EU, which is a real threat. So we cannot expect the corporate sector to, by and large, support a meaningful privacy system in the era of big data that will allow individuals to make decisions about what is collected and how it can be used. And that's incredibly difficult today because of all the information that's out there has been talked about. But we need to give people basic rights, and we don't have them. We're just losing what we have today.
Describe what those basic rights might look like.
Well, the Obama administration has proposed, but they haven't really laid out the details, a consumer privacy bill of rights. They released it 2 years ago. It's currently being reassessed in the light of big data collection capabilities. But those rights should be that, in fact, they cannot collect all this information about you. They can't track you online, place a cookie on your computer, track you online, use outside data brokers to create these robust profiles, sell access to your profile in milliseconds to the highest bidder through online ad exchanges, to financial companies, to health companies, everything that's going going on today that the industry knows about, you would be much more in control, especially over your sensitive health and financial and highly personal data. We have to stop all this kind of data collection. They want to use the Internet of Things as kind of an excuse because they know, yes, it'll be incredible service. I mean, I do think the enchanted objects, yes, that's a possibility, but it's also likely to become a kind of grim fairy tale nightmare about how much they're able to know about us, evaluate us, profile us, discriminate against us. Because remember, one of the data elements they're collecting and using is about our race and our sexuality, whether we're Hispanic, whether we're poor, what we buy, where we live, whether we're obese, et cetera, et cetera. So they have all that, and they intend to extend their ability to market and advertise and influence, and politicians using this too, through the Internet of Things. And until we get some privacy legislation that stops this flow of data that's collected and used to profile and target us, we're in for a real problem here.
We're discussing the Internet of Things with David Rose of the MIT Media Lab, Michelle Dennity of McAfee, and Jeff Chester of the Center for Digital Democracy. We'd like to discuss it with you, too, so call us, 866-733-6786. Email us, forum at kqed.org, comment on our Facebook page, or tweet us. We are at KQED Forum. David Rose, you talk about some of these concerns in your book, Enchanted Objects. What do you make of our ability to deal with some of these ethical privacy issues? I mean, you know, people can't extract themselves from Google. If you told people to stop using Google, they'd rather have an aneurysm than not use Google. But we know that Google is tracking us very, very actively. Facebook tracks us very actively and has announced they're going to track us more actively, including the sites we look at outside of Facebook. So as consumers, are we kind of stuck?
Yeah, I mean, Google's been reading my email for many years now. I'm not sure that they're able to do anything very useful with it besides put more banner ads in my periphery that I don't click on. I mean, my take on the Internet of Things is there's so much more positive behavior change and sharing of data and creating digital portraits for people to understand themselves and to use their social network to help motivate either more positive, healthy behaviors or convenience than I am worried about the sort of data exhaust and predictive analytics that are possible through this technology. I mean, a couple of examples.
We're almost up against the break, so give me one quick example.
Sure. Well, so my last company was called Vitality. We made internet-connected pill bottle caps that could remind you to take meds, and then if you opted into the service, it would share that data with a loved one so they could see on a weekly basis with an email whether you did or didn't take your meds. And also, if you chose to, would share the data with a care provider, like a transplant coordinator, if you had a new liver or kidney. And we found that medication adherence rates went from 70% above 95% because you had a social incentive to do something that was in your own best interest. And there's a lot of privacy, there's a privacy concern there that it was important that the insurance company didn't see the data stream. But still, having that data in an everyday object that captured an everyday action was really powerful for increasing people's health and reducing insurance costs.
All right. So, and I imagine that as we continue with this conversation, we're almost up against a break. But as we continue this conversation, we should keep thinking about the ways that consumers can assert their rights in this regard, how businesses can just convince people that these services are trustworthy and that is worth handing you more of our information. But we'll get into that after we take this break. We will continue our conversation on the Internet of Things with David Rose, Michelle Dennity, and Jeff Chester. Please continue to call us, 866-733-6786. Email us, forum at kqed.org. I'm Joshua Johnson. Glad to have you with us. This is Forum from KQED Public Radio. This is Forum from KQED Public Radio. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're discussing the Internet of Things with David Rose of the MIT Media Lab, Michelle Dennedy of McAfee, and Jeff Chester of the Center for Digital Democracy. Feel free to give us a call, 866-733-6786. Email us, forum@kqed.org. You can also find us on Facebook or tweet us. We are at KQED Forum. Before I forget to mention it, David, I understand you will be appearing at Kepler's in Menlo Park in a few weeks. Is that right?
That's correct. Come out and learn more about enchanted objects. I'll be bringing a bunch of example products with me, and people can sort of try things on and see if they would be interested in living with a lot of these things.
That's July 22nd at Kepler's in Menlo Park at 7:30. And Michelle Dennedy, your book, The Privacy Engineer's Manifesto, is actually on Kindle as a free ebook. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
So you can pay for the paper or you can get it on Kindle for free. Let's go to the phones now. 866-733-6786. David in Santa Rosa. David, good morning.
Good morning. Listen, I just have a little problem with enchanted objects because I feel like, as in the case with Target and other things we placed our trust in, multi-million-dollar organizations that aren't promoting enchanted objects, that all you've got to do is have your umbrella contact the weather station, and the weather station has a bug in it. And all of a sudden, the bug is in the rest of your house, and they can shut the PG&E off on your house. I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks, David. And you know, Michelle Dennedy, let me put this to you. That may sound like a far-fetched situation. But as we said in the first half, McAfee is talking about the potential for hackers to do this even now. I mean, there was the report that came out last year about the weakness in the U.S. infrastructure and how terrorists from around the world can very easily, even now with the technology they have now, shut down power stations. So this is not a far-fetched concern.
It's not at all. And it's a really important thing to imagine what that solution and what those risks may be. Because, you know, think about what we know as BYOD, or bring your own device. It was the most powerful tool for every hacker and malware purveyor on the planet for you to be able to just do something as simple as choosing the phone that you like. Simply because you go back to work, then you plug in your device into a corporate network and you introduce exponentially more risk. That's what we're talking about in an even bigger environment with the Internet of Things. So to get to the next level, to have something that we can actually trust and have some integrity, we really have to geek out on the architecture and the protective measures that we want and think about what do we want to get out of this network at the end of the day. Instead of just throwing everything up against the wall and creating some magical, mystical land, first let's imagine what we want to get out of this. Do we really want our milk carton talking to us?
Let me go to a couple of online comments. The milk carton thing seems to have kind of struck a nerve. Scott writes, as it stands, I have email and internet access that are both riddled with spies and ads and potential hijacking. Now am I going to open up my umbrella and my refrigerator to hacking for a milk coupon? I may just be an old man, but when it starts to rain, I'll fold up my own umbrella. Andrew writes, it is amazing to me how blithely unaware all of these companies, Amazon, Apple, Facebook, Google, are of the creepiness factor. When they forward things like drone use, could those things look more spidery and alien-ish? Or the Internet of Things reaching into your home for every inch of private data about you that they can get. David Rose of MIT, I have to admit, the creepy factor is killing me about this. I mean, I've seen enough Terminator movies. Skynet became self-aware through cyberspace. I don't know if you saw Terminator 3, but that's how it happened. The idea that we are calling this the Internet of Things sounds like a euphemism for surveillance. It sounds like a genteel term for surveillance. Isn't that really what this is?
Well, there's certainly the potential to embed sensors in lots and lots of things. And to the extent that sensors can cascade information up into the cloud and that information can be used for lots of things, I mean, that's sort of, I guess, the definition of surveillance. I think the notion that a display device like a pill cap that knows if you've opened it, or a umbrella, or an ambient orb that shows you the price of energy from PG&E, or you know, some of these, or parking meters that know that you know that you haven't paid and you can slide your credit card in, like these sort of infrastructure objects. I don't think people should assume that they can talk to each other very well yet, versus just talking to the cloud. Nor should people assume that they will all collude against us just because we can imagine that scenario.
Well, we're imagining it, though. We're not just imagining it, because I think you have from the Snowden revelations, you know, that we know that all this data, you know, can be, in fact, accessed, compiled, and then used. And we know from what they're doing now, Professor Rose, what they're doing. There's no guarantee right now they can't take all that data about their pillbox. Yes, it's a convenience, and yes, it can help improve health behaviors, but it can also get to health companies and data brokers, and it can be used to discriminate against you. It can get to government that wants to learn more about you, to the police and law enforcement.
But Jeff, so Chester, let me push back and put the contrary question to you. Yes, it is presumable, it is possible, even now with the data that we have, that forget about web-enabled coffee mugs and armchairs. I mean, you swipe your credit card in a parking meter in Oakland and you swipe it in San Jose and the police are saying, all points bulletin for Joshua Johnson, Visa can tell them where I was. So we already have some of that technology, but is it fair to presume the worst case scenario? Is it fair to presume that the Internet of Things will become a means for government tracking, government intrusion,
yes,
law enforcement overstepping? Is that a fair assumption?
Yes, because look, the infrastructure of data collection, personalized data collection, you know, which is unprecedented and growing every day, and what the U.S. companies are doing is really expanding this all over the world. I mean, stealing other people's data is one of America's few growth industries. All right, that, you know, that's already happening. It's all about making advertising and marketing and influencing you through this information. All right, they're already doing it, and they're going to take the Internet of Things, and it's going to be able to further build out the business system they've already created. There's no reason to think that all of a sudden they're going to say, we're going to fly right and we're going to create a true civil society. Yes, there's an interest in doing that, but in fact, all of the revenues from the Google and Facebook are from advertising and marketing, and they're doing everything they can to expand the tracking so that they can get even more revenues and advertising. And I think we also have to be worried about sustainability and the environment, because this is all about selling. And maybe, in fact, you'll use your social network and use these tools to engage wisely, as Professor Rose suggests. But it's likely that something else will happen, because the most powerful forces will be to get you to consume, to buy more. And we have to think about that.
You know, Jeff, actually, one of our listeners wrote online to the sustainability question. One of our listeners wrote, how will smart chips embedded in consumer product packaging affect their ability to be recycled or composted? Will these products have to be thrown in the garbage, wind up in a landfill? Will stores be required to take the packaging back and recycle it? If not, I would resist using those products. The environment will always take precedence over convenience for me. And we know that there is already a problem with digital components and the highly dangerous chemicals that are inside every single microchip piling up in landfills and slowly being reclaimed. Let's go back to the phones. Feel free to call in. I'm interested in knowing what future connected devices you're most excited about, maybe most concerned about, your privacy questions, your concerns. Are you looking forward to a future that looks more like Starfleet or a little more like Skynet? Please call us, 866-733-6786. Ryan in San Francisco. Ryan, good morning.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
I was curious what your guests think about the idea of the people that are the objects, or the people who have this information that these large companies are aggregating, if they've heard any, or what they think of the idea of like collectivizing, kind of like a union where a third-party company that you sign up with then negotiates with these companies, because it seems like they have all the power right now, and we're just kind of sitting around wondering which direction they're going to take it and have no actual ability to, like, mold the direction it's going to go in the future.
It's an interesting question, Ryan. Michelle Dennity, what about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't want you to leave with the impression that every privacy professional is angry. We're actually really excited about the future in privacy, and I think it is because of this great question, which is, you know, at what point do we build enough convenient and understandable control so that the consumer can actually decide what is delightful? Because not every company is an advertising company. I know that there's a lot of debate and that it's an important debate to have. But you also have to remember there's other things like the MRI machine, for example, collecting information about the alignment of the water molecules in my brain prevents my doctor from having to crack my skull open. I'm delighted by that technology. I don't want that information shared further. I may want to have some sort of an agent out there that says, how do I authenticate that I am I and I have access to my information? And we're seeing lots and lots of young companies and big companies embedded within our own company, within the Intel McAfee community. We're building those kinds of agents for you because we think that consumers will find that to be a delightful experience, to be a respectful and ethical experience. So I don't think everything is kind of data Armageddon. I think there's a lot of innovation that's going to happen in this space because of this feeling that we still want to be in control of our persona and our personal lives.
Back to the phones now with Chris in San Jose. Chris, good morning.
Hi. My question is just a privacy issue thing, and it has to do with all these security questions that we're asked to answer these days. And I was on a site the other day, and I signed up, and they gave me a list of very obscure questions, and I had to answer one of them. I shouldn't decline. And the thing is, I'm starting to get very concerned because I've answered a number of these questions, maybe a dozen different ones on various sites. And if I forget my password or email, then maybe I should just create a new account. But I'm worried that, you know, all this very private information, it's not anonymous anymore. It's very personal, private information that only I should know the answer to. And it's being, you know, dispersed out there. And like your other guest, I don't trust companies or the government with my data.
Chris, are you talking about those, like, mother's maiden name type questions?
Yes.
Okay, gotcha. So
they can be way more obscure than that, like fifth grade teacher or, you know, first pet and all these things. And they all sound somewhat innocuous, but, you know, when you start to gather these up, I mean, it's personal information that people are willingly, you know, or not really willingly, but I guess they're giving it up without realizing maybe that it's... If somebody breaks into Target's computers, they're going to get the answers to my personal questions.
Yeah, I hear you on that, Chris. Thanks for calling in. Let's go to Dale in San Francisco. Dale, good morning.
Good morning.
What's on your mind, Dale?
I guess for me the thing is it's the money. The money. If we follow the money, I realize most of the people involved in developing this technology are very excited about it because it's been a bright spot in our economy. There's a lot of jobs there, and you know it's understandable that they it's kind of a myopic world that they're in, that it's all good. And I think when we look at the everything from the Vatican to major corporations on down, big money. Tends not to be looking out for anybody but itself. And that's what's funding this whole development. Well, if we follow that and connect the dots, it seems inherently unhealthy.
You know, Dale, I want to...
Can I cut in? It seems like there are many examples of benign and, in fact, good services out there that are helping people track health metrics in order to motivate better sleeping, more walking, more calm technology that's trying to get people away from sitting all day at a workstation. And I feel like there are many examples of companies that are trying, in fact, to help people live a better life and have a better user experience. That are not just out to make a lot of money.
And I think it's also worth noting that, you know, David Rose, for you at MIT, you know this very well, but a number of the people who are funding this research are nonprofits. I mean, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation has poured millions of dollars into the MIT Media Lab for a variety of projects over the years, but that's nonprofit money that is going to push some of these frontiers.
That's right, and there's a lot of good that can come out of having these rethinking about computing in a new way.
Jeff,
there's also a huge amount of corporate money. In fact, the majority of the money I would suggest that goes to MIT Media Lab is corporate money to kind of help create new ventures. And yes, you know, the positive you know, techniques that that Professor Rose talks about is occurring, but I would say it is already dominated and will continue to be eclipsed by the use of these digital technologies by the pharmaceutical and health companies that are using this information to track what we buy, to target us, to encourage us to get more prescription drugs and other kinds of treatments that we may not need. Look, we need a national debate in this country before we deploy the Internet of Things. We need to ask ourselves, do we really want to have a surveillance society where the most powerful are able to know so much more about us and use that data to influence us, who we vote for, what we buy, you know, et cetera? And until we have that kind of debate and look at the risks as well as the benefits, we're going to continue to stumble blindly into the future that, frankly, the digital venture capitalists and their allies are creating for us.
Well, Jeff, let me ask you this. The comments that we have online, at least, are highly skeptical/negative about the Internet of Things. We have a number of callers who are very concerned.
It's the Bay Area. What would you expect?
Well, Bay Area, yes. But, I mean, we have...
I appreciate it.
Well, yeah. There's a fair amount of concern about this more broadly than just the Bay Area. We have some calls on the line that are not from the Bay Area. We've had a couple today and a couple yesterday as well. So
Sorry. It's
a national audience. But
thank you.
Absent the debate, what would you want in terms of regulation to make this Internet of Things work for you? I have to admit skepticism that Silicon Valley is going to stop and wait for the conversation. That is not going to happen. That's not the way that progress works. What would you want, absent that debate, in terms of regulation, legislation, what should it look like?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing is we have to better look at how all this technology is actually, all this data collection is actually being used today and what it all means. And frankly, because the Congress hasn't been interested in doing anything because they're lobbied by the industry, and even the Obama administration is very aligned with the data collection industry, and the Academy really hasn't looked very critically at this as well. There isn't that much information out there at the moment about what the actual harms are. Now, the Federal Trade Commission last month, and I hope your listeners will look at this, issued their first major report on the online data broker industry. They looked at 9 data brokers. And although the report is kind of written in a kind of bland way, if you read, you will see that, in fact, all this data already being collected about us online, and it's an exploding industry, is potentially being used to sell us expensive loans. It's going into our health files. There's all kinds of problems that's already emerged. We need to look very carefully at the Internet of Things and to see how that data is going to be used, whether or not it will, in fact, further this kind of profiling and potential discriminatory set of practices that have emerged. We can't stop the flow of data, but we can give individuals much more information about how this how their data is being used. And frankly, we could try to put a stop. We should hold Facebook and Google accountable and tell them and the others, stop expanding your data collection and your tracking and profiling every day, which is what they are doing.
I know we're going to have to let David Rose go shortly, but before we do, David, tell us what you are watching most closely, what you're most excited about as it relates to the Internet of Things, before we lose you for the hour.
Well, this may incite even more passion, but
go right ahead.
I am very interested in the category of life logging. So this is technology that allows you to put even more cameras into the world, but rather than cameras for that are looking at the safety of cities or surveillance, this is a camera that you choose to wear. There's one that I'm wearing right now from Narrative, and it is a small little stamp size clip that takes a photo every 30 seconds for me, and it gives me a little flipbook of my day. And obviously it's too many photos for me to curate and go through, but it demands a computer vision system that we're working on at Ditto, which is a startup in Cambridge, in order to understand how many people do I encounter throughout the day? Are they smiling at me, which is sort of an indication of my own either exuberance or depression?
I'm assuming you're not doing this as a replacement for paying attention to the people who are around you.
No.
I'm assuming that you actually see them.
It does reveal how much I multitask. How often do I look at my phone? How often do I snack? how much time do I spend indoors or outdoors? So it creates a sort of digital portrait of myself that's useful just for my own sense of how I allocate my time.
Well, David, let me suggest that when you come to Menlo Park on July 22nd, that you pay copious attention to the people at Kepler's who are there to speak with you about your book, Enchanted Objects, Design, Human Desire, and the Internet of Things. David Rose of the MIT Media Lab, thanks for talking to us.
Enjoyed it. Thank you.
Let's go back to the phones now with Nick in Mill Valley. Nick, good morning.
Good morning.
What's on your mind? Hey, Nick, can you hear me?
I do installations of smart devices like, well, for example, thermostats and several different manufacturers, not just the big guy. And one of the things that I do when I talk to my customers about the installation is that I do notify them that, you know, these things are really and truly, you know, open to people hacking into. And at some point, if they really do think about it, what would happen in the United States if somebody were to hack into the system of any of the different smart thermostats, turn all the furnaces or all the air conditioners on at the same time? You know, we'd have a very severe brownout at least, but probably a blackout, especially if it was in, like, say, New York in the winter or something like that. And I don't see anything in the news or even from the manufacturers about them making any attempt to actually harden the devices against hacking.
I hear you. Nick, thanks for talking to us. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Linda in San Francisco. Linda, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for the super interesting discussion. I just wanted to say, in regard to not being able to get away from Google, wanted to put in a plug for the search engine DuckDuckGo, which does not track its users or their searches, and therefore it does not already know every last thing about me like Google does, and therefore it cannot tailor its search results accordingly. But to me, that is a good thing.
DuckDuckGo.com?
Yes.
Cool. All right. Thank you, Linda. Michelle Dennedy, it seems like this Internet of Things creates a number of problems, which Jeff Chester has articulated, that are real concerns. But it also creates, and there's a lot of money. Obviously, Google has proven there are billions of dollars to be made in knowing everything about you. But there also seems to be a lot of money to be made and a lot of business to be done in protecting people from that, in allowing these smart devices to do specifically what the consumers want to do. And so it's not necessarily a one-sided economic question.
Absolutely. And I think the build-out, and I think that where a lot of the kind of the concerns have come, the build-out has been so far, what can we do? Can we make the green blinky lights blink? Yay! Now, I think the most exciting thing is, what should we do? What do we desire? What are the ethical constructs here? Do we want it to be like the Dr. Bones in Star Trek, who can just wave a device over your body and get good information and actually cure you? So now is the time, and I agree with the fact, I don't think there'll be a restraint while we're building it out, but the debate is now. And I think, let's think about the empowered consumer. If you have a problem with this stuff, speak out. Go to privacy@favoritebusiness.com. I'm a chief privacy officer. I run the compliance and governance stuff as well as the innovation arm of privacy at McAfee. I love hearing from consumers. Tell me what you hate, because you know what? I don't want to build that. Tell me what you love. I do want to build that.
Speaking of what people hate, one of our online listeners writes, "The Internet of Things is a new power, and like all power, it is both positive and negative. Having to not have to remember to feed my cat, where I left my keys, or when it's going to rain is great. If you're a good person, what do I have to worry about? These companies can read my email or know that I am out of milk, but that doesn't mean they can get me to do anything I don't want to do. My only worry is that maybe my connected umbrella will broadcast an annoying commercial while I'm using it." Let's
well,
go back to...
I think that one has to look at that and examine it, because it's not just the data. I mean, we already know that they're using the data, for example, to identify individuals to be targeted for payday loans, which are very expensive, so they know, let's say, person X is living in neighborhood X, maybe on their mobile phone, they need money, they're three blocks from the payday loan store, and they get an ad right then and there, and they've already been profiled to get a kind of higher rates. This is already being used in discriminatory ways. It's not necessarily just about advertising. In addition, Google and the others are adding to the data very sophisticated applications through social media, even using neuroscience, testing the ads, using MRIs and EEGs to hone the messages, and politicians are using these techniques too, to kind of bypass our conscious minds. And I know it sounds kind of paranoid. I wish it was. In fact, the Bay Area is one of the homes of the biggest neuromarketing company. So it's a system of influence. What the digital marketers and the online companies, and now everyone's using these big data techniques, have really created is a pervasive system of influence to be able to know where we are, what we do, and to analyze and predict and to use all the capabilities they have to get us to do things. And it may not be apparent, and maybe we're at the beginning of it, but certainly it's growing every day, and in a democratic society, we should be concerned about it.
Let's go back to the phones. Aaron in Alameda. Aaron, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
What's on your mind? Briefly, please.
In addition to the privacy and e-waste concerns, what I find missing from these conversations is the chronic and escalating exposure to microwave radiation, which more and more science is showing is a major concern, especially in Europe. And if we're adding, this to more and more devices, we're only escalating thousands of fold our microwave radiation exposure.
Definitely something worth taking into account. Aaron, thanks for calling in. I do want to, we're running out of time in the hour, and I do want to get from both of you the next step, what we should be doing. Michelle Dennity of McAfee, what do you think, the biggest boon, the biggest potential, the biggest step we can take now to make this march toward the Internet of Things as positive as possible?
Yeah, I think, number one, let your voice be heard, for sure. As a consumer, you are tremendously empowered. But part of the reason we wrote the manifesto was looking back at what works with architectural restraints, what are the security standards and the privacy standards, that instead of leaving them to a public policy debate, we actually incorporate them as functional specifications and quality aspects of the things that we actually build to provide consumers. If we leave this in the hands of the lawyers, and I'm a lawyer, then we're not going to win. If we put it in the hands of the creative artists, the engineers and the builders, and the inspectors and auditors, then we're going to have something that's worth building and inspecting in the future.
And Jeff, briefly, before I let you go, you've laid out the concerns very clearly. What do you want us to do about it? Very briefly, name one thing that you want everyone to do about the Internet of Things.
You need to think twice about where the data is going to end up and how it might be used to not just serve you but hurt you. And we need regulation at the state, federal level, especially, and from the European Union, which is leading the way on all these issues.
So you're asking people to stay active in the push for regulation,
yeah,
and just be aware.
Don't trust industry to take your best interest at heart. It won't turn out that way. I wish it would be otherwise. We need legal safeguards.
Gotcha. Well, this has been a very, very fruitful discussion. I know it's a hot topic we're going to come back to, and I think everybody's going to look at their next carton of milk a little bit differently. Thanks to our guests, Michelle Dennity, Chief Privacy Officer of McAfee. I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Jeff Chester, the Executive Director of the Center for Digital Democracy. Glad to have had you on. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you so much.
Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Suki Lewis, and Tina Lauber. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Joshua Johnson. Michael Krasny is back on Monday. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. This is Forum from KQED Public Radio.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.